You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show. My name is Charles Rose Jr., and we focus on breaking through limitations and barriers to get you to that next level of investing. With me is William Palmer, my amazing co-host. And in today's episode, our guest will be talking about how he went from a fourplex to multi-million dollar acquisitions.
That's right, Charles. And he'll talk about how he can help you effectively and efficiently raise more capital while getting your time back. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show, where we guide you to financial freedom and break barriers in your investing to give you the secrets to success. And now, here are your hosts, Charles Rose Jr. and William Palmer.
Hi, everyone. It's Charles Rose Jr. with Breakthrough Investor, where we help you break through that next level as an investor. And with me today is William Palmer, real estate investor and co-host of the Breakthrough Investor podcast and a really good friend of mine. William, what's up, brother? How wonderful are you doing today, man?
I am doing fantastic. Super excited, as always, to be here with you, Charles, and really looking forward to diving into our next guest on the podcast.
Yeah, man. Man, this guy is so cool. Like, if I tell you, you know what's on his face, I think it's going to give it away. But this guy, like, I mean, I don't mean to go off script a little bit, William, but, you know, this guy has the most amazing mustache I've ever seen.
Yeah, him and Alec are, like, straight up, like, on the same level. And for those of you who are just listening to this on audio, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, or wherever it is, you just got to know this dude's got an epic mustache.
100%. Now that the important thing is said, but behind that mustache is an amazing CEO and co-founder of Capitalist Pro, which is the number one CRM for raising capital on autopilot. Man, looking at his software, William, I'm like, where was this software all my life?
I know, like, it's amazing that he was saying that he's not diagnosed, self-diagnosed ADHD. So he's got to have all these systems and procedures. And so, like, the website's awesome. And he's also a real estate expert that went from a fourplex to being involved in multi-million dollar acquisitions, which it's like, we have people that have these things that, like, have some pretty amazing jumps. But every story is so unique on how that happened and why it happened. It's absolutely phenomenal, and love getting into that stuff.
Oh, yeah, man. And man, William, above all, like, what I like about him, and just, you know, we know him in person from the Real Estate Wealth Builders Conference, but he has such a giving heart, right? And his goal is to help so many people. In fact, he is the host of the Millionaire Mind podcast. And so, I mean, this guy is a veteran, man. He has some serious experience and love helping people as well. And so I'm just super excited to introduce our guest today, William. Are you?
Absolutely. And you're, as always, Charles, you're setting the bar really high and making me wait. So could you please introduce our guest?
Well, I'll give you the honor today then, William, just so I don't stretch it any longer.
Absolutely. Please, everybody, help us welcome Dallin Schultz. Dallin, how are you doing, man?
Good. Thanks so much, guys. And what I didn't tell you is words of affirmation is my love language. And do I feel, I feel loved right now? You guys are awesome. Thanks so much for this opportunity. I'm glad we have a few moments to talk here.
Oh, man. Man, I saw your mustache raising as we were speaking all of these wonderful words, which are true, you know? So
they are true, 100%, guys. Anybody listening, they're 100% true.
So, Dallin, man, like, man, I know that our audience is super excited to hear your story. And we are, too. We want to hear more of your story, man. So tell us more about your investing journey. And how did you get started? What initially made you want to be an investor, man?
So I grew up in a real estate home. My grandfather owned, at their busiest time, about 300 units in upstate New York. And my father managed it. He was a landlord. He managed it. And so I grew up doing all the dirty work that is involved in real estate investing. And I was grateful for it as a kid. I learned a lot of useful skills. I always had a summer job. But that aspect of that, that was my view of real estate. As a teenage boy, that was my view of real estate, shingling roofs in the summer in humid New York, shoveling snow in the winter at 4:30 in the morning before school so tenants don't slip and injure themselves. So that's not what I wanted for my life. Like, I was grateful for it. It sucked. I didn't care for it. I didn't understand or comprehend. And I kind of wish I asked more questions as a kid to my grandfather, because I would probably be much further ahead now than where I am. But I wouldn't regret, I wouldn't change anything about my journey. It's the path, it's the journey that I had to go on. So I grew up in that real estate world, knew it wasn't what I wanted to do. I really enjoyed caring for people and serving and giving. And I was fascinated with the physiology of our bodies. Like, it's just incredible what the human body can do. And so I was naturally attracted to the medical field, because you can experience that, you can give, you can serve. I hated school. So like medicine, becoming a doctor was like, yeah, no, that was out of the picture. So I actually went and got my bachelor's in nursing so I could then specialize and become a nurse anesthetist. And they're the ones that give you anesthesia when you're going under surgery. Hospitals like them because they pay them $200,000 a year versus $700,000 a year to an anesthesiologist, and they can all do the same thing. Anyways, so that's what I wanted to do. So I went to school, got my degree, and you have to get live experience before you can apply to a CRNA school, nurse anesthetist school. And I started working in the ER, and I realized very quickly that what I thought I was going to get out of the medical field wasn't going to fill that need that I wanted to give and to serve. And that sounds kind of bad, because that's like the vision that's painted for people in the medical field. It's another corporation. It's a nonprofit corporation that profits quite a bit of money, but it just wasn't giving me what I was looking for. And I remember a few months into that realizing, okay, if I wanted to specialize, it's going to be probably another $200,000. It's going to be about 4 or 5 more years of school. And I already told you how I feel about school, not education and learning. I love that. The sitting down, that piece of it, I struggle with. And I think it's because as an entrepreneur, we got our self-diagnosed ADHD brains. We're always looking for something else to do, right? So sitting down, listening, studying for an exam can be very, very difficult. So I remember sitting there thinking, okay, if I want to specialize, I kind of have to decide now, because that would determine where I spent the next 1 or 2 years gaining my experience before school. And I remember sitting there at home, and my mind flash forwarded about 5 years. And I realized if I was to spend a couple hundred thousand more dollars, spend 4 or 5 more years to get a degree that I already kind of had a feeling I didn't absolutely love or have a passion for, I would feel stuck the rest of my life. Mm. And I'd feel obligated to utilize that because I just spent that time and money getting it. And I remember feeling like the walls closing in on me as I like mentally went there. And I'm naturally a futuristic thinker, but when I went through this experience, like I literally felt claustrophobic. Like I was feeling it internally, and I was like, I can't do it. And fortunately, unfortunately, right around that same time, I broke my leg playing soccer. So part of the reason I got into the medical field was to have that safe, secure job. Everyone's going to get sick. Everyone's going to get hurt. I completely spaced the fact that I could potentially get sick and hurt. So like what would happen in that situation? And I experienced it. I broke my leg. My wife had to wheel me into the ER that I worked at the time. And so all my coworkers were taking care of me, which was kind of embarrassing. But I remember laying there in the gurney in the ER and just all of a sudden realizing, like, what am I going to do? At the time, my wife and I had 2 kids. We have 4 kids now. I just started working a few months prior after going to school for 2 or 3 years, right? So as a husband, as a man, like it's ingrained into us to want to, I should say most of us, want to provide and support our families. Mm-hmm. And when you're sitting in that moment feeling completely helpless, it's a horrible feeling to be in as a father, as a husband, as a man. You don't want to be there. And I realized that this job that I thought was so safe and secure wasn't. And what would happen if this happened again? So that got the wheels turning. Long story short, read that purple book everyone's probably read, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And after reading the Purple Bible, 2 weeks after reading that, 2 weeks after reading that book, we bought our first fourplex without any.
Oh, holy!
Let's back up. 2 weeks after reading it, tell us about that, please.
Like most people that probably read it, something in your brain switches. It just clicks, and like what I went through with realizing I didn't want to specialize as a nurse, and then going through and breaking my leg, I was in the perfect moment where that book spoke to me. And something in my brain clicked. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but this is what I'm going to do with my life. And I didn't know where to start. And just a thought, impression came to me. And my wife and I had just rented from this older couple out of their fourplex. We were out of there. We rented it maybe 18 to 24 months prior to this experience, but we had a great relationship with them. So I call her up and I said, hey, Sharon, Dallin here. Oh, Dallin, how you doing? Great. You know, my wife and I are thinking about getting into real estate. And these people are getting old. Like when I say old, like they're getting old. So I'm like, okay, if anyone's going to sell, it's going to be them. So I give her a call and I was like, just out of curiosity, do you have any interest in selling your fourplex? And she's like, yeah, you know what? We don't. It's our retirement, but the guy next to me is. And this was an area where there was four or five fourplexes, same floor plan, same model, owned by different people. So she gave me his contact number. I call him up and I said, hey, Claude, Sharon gave me your information, said they have a fourplex for sale, interested in buying. Can we come take a look? He's like, sure. So we looked at it the next day and he owned it completely outright. And I didn't know seller financing. I was not involved in Bigger Pockets. I wasn't listening to real estate podcasts. Like I didn't know anything. I just knew I wanted to get a deal. And so I called him up. He owned it outright. We worked out a seller carryback deal. We went through an escrow company. And 2 weeks after reading the book, we literally had possession of the property.
Wow.
Wow. That's wild.
That is amazing. Mike, like 2 weeks, I think you broke the record.
It gave me a false sense of how easy real estate like that. And to piggyback on that, about 6 weeks later, real estate agent we were working with sent us another fourplex that was right behind this one. And they're like, hey, this one's on market. And we ended up winning that one. So within, I'd say it was 2 months, we had 8 units without any of our own money.
Wow.
That never happened. That never happened that quickly ever again. And it gave me this false sense of how easy real estate is. And I have nothing else to attribute it to besides divine intervention and God. And I think that's what I needed at that point in my life to realize, like, this is the path you're going down, Dallin. And I think I needed those quick wins, because after that, it wasn't all sunshines and rainbows. And it's still not. Like, we're still growing, we're still improving. But I think I needed those quick wins. Otherwise, I probably would have gone to something else, because that's just my personality. So I think there was definitely some divine intervention that set the tone for what the next few years were going to consist of.
Quick question. Did your wife read the Purple Bible as well? Or
she didn't, and she hated the, like, I'm sure a lot of people listening to this who are married or have a significant other that are people listening to this are obviously interested in real estate or very gung-ho. Their better halves are probably sick and tired of them talking about real estate. That was the case with my wife. Like the whole first year, she's like, whatever. Like, I'm not trying to talk bad about multi-level marketing companies. I know it can be a great way for people to learn sales skills, but there's kind of like this idea of that type of business. And I felt like she was kind of like putting me like equal just because of how excited I was. Right. And I think that's where it was coming from. It's like, hey, we're going to buy real estate. Look at this. Look at cash flow. Like NOI. Isn't it cool? It all makes sense. But she was very, very supportive. Never read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Has been supportive since day one. But she's other than the external support that she continues to give me, she hasn't been involved. And that's okay.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. My wife's the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone has a different story, and you have to do what works for you, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, man. Dude, that's an amazing story, man. And so I heard you say, you know, these first two deals where you got to 8 units, you know, made you feel like everything was going to be easy. And you mentioned that, you know, it wasn't for a lot of other things. Let's unpack some of those stories, because, you know, the whole goal of this podcast, Dallin, as we mentioned to you, is to talk about some of those breakthroughs, talk about some of those trials and tribulations you went through, because we have audience who is listening right now, who's going through stuff, and some people might encounter stuff in the future. So we'd like to hear your story of some things you ran into over the years, man.
Yeah. So a lot of them are probably self-inflicted, as most people. You don't know what you don't know. And it's about the experience and learning early on. So after we bought that second fourplex, I had no idea people like you and I owned large apartment buildings. I always thought it was a rich guy out of LA, New York City, Dubai. Like it blew my mind when I found out that people like us owned apartment buildings. And I was 26, 27 years old. And I was like, excuse my French, where the hell was all this information when I was for the last 26 years? Like, where was it? And I was kind of irritated. Anyways, okay, I'm digressing. So after we bought that second fourplex, we went to an apartment investing conference in Texas. And that's when I was first introduced to the idea of syndications and funds. And similar to my experience with reading Rich Dad Poor Dad, something clicked. And I was like, this is it. This is that next level. Because up to that point, I was just going to be the fourplex king, buying fourplexes. That's all I knew. That's all I knew. And there's nothing wrong with that. I know people doing very, very well taking that approach, but it's not what I envisioned for my future. And so that in itself, making that conscious decision to stop, but I probably could have kept buying in that area I was buying in, but I made a conscious decision to stop because I knew it's not what I wanted anymore. And I wanted to go big. I wanted the big dogs. I wanted the big deals. And I knew that to operate at that level, it was going to require a significant amount of education, learning, networking. And so I had this quick burst of success in real estate. Mm-hmm. And then it came to a screeching halt while I spent the next, I would say, solid 12 months just learning and networking and traveling. And so that's hard when you like experience this big boost of success and you know you could keep going. But I guess I had some clarity on what it is that I wanted. And I was willing to take a break on some of the short-term wins to start building what I wanted in the future. And similar to when I made the decision to that I didn't want to specialize in nursing anymore. And by the way, at this time, I was still working full time as a nurse. Like I wasn't in a position where I could quit my job. So that's another thing I want to mention. I did that for 2 years before I was able to leave my job, even though I knew a few months into that career, it's not what I wanted to do. So this wasn't like, hey, I bought my first deal and I retired and quit my job. It didn't happen like that. But the ultimate thing that made me decide to pursue real estate in that moment of determining, should I specialize? Should I do something else? When I fast forwarded 5 years, I thought to myself, where do you want to be in 5 years? And what path is going to get you there? And so that helped me make that decision to not further my education in the medical field. And then same thing, when we decided to stop buying the fourplexes and go into larger real estate, same thing. Okay, where do you want to be in 5 years? If you were to keep buying fourplexes, where would you be in 5 years? If you stopped and learned how to do bigger things, where would you be in 5 years? And it's all, we have no proof of what's going to happen, right? So this is just stuff that I'm working out in my mind. And at the end of the day, I just went with the route that felt like it was the right path for me. And I think ultimately that's what people got to do.
Absolutely. Awesome.
Like how did you start? So this is, I always find this interesting. How did you start, or where did you start learning? Like you learn one thing here, you went to that conference, right, down in Texas or wherever it was. But what were you like, okay, well, I need to learn more about underwriting. I need to learn more about this. Where did you go to learn those things? Like how did you start with that? It's always interesting to hear how people develop the skills that they now have.
So that very first fourplex we bought, I had no idea how to run numbers, how to do anything. My father at that time had just purchased an RV park in Arizona that he owned. And then I reached out to my grandfather and I said, hey, how do you figure out how to buy these things? And so I know I have it somewhere on my computer. They sent me this, and no disrespect to them. My grandfather sent me a spreadsheet that he used to analyze the deal on one page of Excel printed. Like there weren't even any formulas. It was just like cells and placeholders of put your income here, put your expenses here. Like it was super, super rudimentary and basic. And I was like, oh, this is great. And I was just eating it up. And it was enough to buy those deals. I want to say we bought them smart. They worked out, but like you don't know what you don't know. So I started with that. And then it's going to those conferences helped. And we got a hold of a lot of these groups have underwriting tools and spreadsheets. And so it took time. This wasn't something we did overnight. And I think regardless of where you at or what you want to do in real estate, learning to underwrite a deal has probably be the most fundamental foundational skill that anyone in this game needs to learn. Now, I'm not a numbers guy. I'm not our current underwriter, but I because I went through that, I can now have sophisticated conversations and I know what we're looking at to determine if it's a deal we want to invest in or not. And then I have people that love numbers that are actually doing the analysis, and then we have a conversation about it. So it's getting around the right people that are actively doing it, I think, is the best thing you could do. You don't have to go to conferences. There's meetups everywhere. Just go start talking.
You know, I love how you mentioned that you said you might not be good at underwriting the numbers, but there are other people who are. And so I love how you work off of your strengths, right? And so we know that, you know, one of your strengths is like systems and processes. Were you always like that when you were younger? No. or you kind of grew into the systems guy?
I definitely think it was a skill that was uncovered through the journey I was on. And I look back, I always like to look back as like, were there early signs that this is who I was? And growing up, like, you wouldn't think, like, you walk into, like, most teenage boys' rooms, you walk into their room, you literally could not see my floor. There was clothes and crap and stuff everywhere. And then when I left home, for whatever reason, maybe it was being in a smaller dorm room or something, I found myself not being able to focus or concentrate on what I was doing if there were messes around me. And so I would intentionally, if there was a mess or things were disorganized, I would organize it so that way I could focus. Now what I know now, that's symptoms of ADHD and stuff. Again, I've never been officially diagnosed. So looking back, I think there were some things that started manifesting themselves. But I realized when I got into real estate, I love a lot of these groups that are out there. That's where I learned a lot of my education. Where I feel like they lack is not helping the individual identify exactly where they fit into that real estate equation. Because when you're buying real estate, there's a lot of moving parts. And especially when people are doing single family or small multifamily, you end up doing everything yourself. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think naturally, since I was wanting to go bigger and getting into larger deals, you have to have a team around you. There's no choice. You can't do it on your own. So I think it kind of forced me to learn more about what I liked, what I didn't like. And I think the easiest way to gain clarity on this for yourself is when you're doing a task, simply ask yourself, does this energize me or does it drain me? Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that you can't do it or that you're not good at it. That's not what I'm saying. Just ask yourself, does it energize me or does it drain me? If it drains you, you delegate that. You delegate it or you eliminate it as quick as you can. And this trap that I fell into early on was the things that drained me, I thought drained everyone. And that's not reality. The reality is what drains me will energize you, Charles, or energize you, William. And what drains you energizes me. Look at that. We've got a team. We got complementary skill sets. Let's go get a deal done together. And the mistake I think a lot of people newer in real estate make is that they go to these events, they meet people in the space, they become buddies with people. And naturally, the newer people in real estate flock together because they find comfort in other people that don't know as much as them. But then you start a business or you buy real estate with your best friend that you grew up with. And you realize you got two similar of skill sets. And there's things that aren't getting done and you start butting heads. And both of you could be phenomenal real estate investors. You're just in the wrong position. You're in the wrong role. I mean, go ahead.
I almost wonder, is there like, have you built like a spreadsheet yet or something where you ask these questions, like a questionnaire where you find out where, like what individual would work better in certain areas of deal?
I stumbled across something. It's called the Strength Finders, Clifton Strengths 34.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. So I'm not an affiliate for it. I'm not going to send you a link for it. I stumbled across that, and I've taken a lot of these DISC assessments and different things. This assessment blew my mind because what it does is it has 34 themes, traits, and it organizes it 1 through 34 based on 177 question assessment you take. And when I was reading through the results, and it was a 25-page report that it spit out to me after I took it, I'm reading through the results. I was like, holy shoot. Like, I knew this about me, but I didn't know this about me. And I've never had something tell me this is kind of why the way I am that I am. Now, that's not particular to real estate. That's just like your personality in general. But from that, I was able to extract those strengths and then apply it to different areas in real estate. And I was able to help other people along that way too, because of my knowledge of being in the space for a few years already. So I can't recommend that one enough. I think it's an incredible tool.
I agree. Yeah. I've taken that one. I'm super high I and high D, whatever that means. I can't remember, but those are my two strengths, or higher portions rather.
DISC. So I think that's the DISC assessment that you're referring to. Yeah.
Yeah. This one, William, is different. I'll send you the links to it, William, but okay. It's awesome. Like it goes yeah. deeper than the DISC. You know, as you were talking, I just looked at, mine. I popped it up. It says, you know, my top five strengths: learner, connectedness, achiever, futuristic, and significance. I just popped up this old thing I did some years ago.
Yeah,
I'd be interested to see if I take it again, if I could come up with different results.
It's a powerful tool.
It is. It is, man. So, Dalin, man. So I know you help investors raise capital. And how do you do that, man? I know, you know, we're almost running out of time, but I think, you know, a lot of people listening, I think that's a hot, juicy topic, like how to raise money.
There's no shortcut and there's no secret sauce. I'm just going to be straightforward with you. Like, everyone's looking for this shortcut, this easy way to do it. Like, we're still learning better ways to do it. But at the end of the day, you should have started raising capital 6 months ago, because it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. And we now operate a multi-million dollar fund, and we invest into large multifamily deals. I'm just partnered with a group and closed on 382 units in Fort Worth, Texas about a month and a half ago. But what we decided to do, and this was just part of the journey, rather than trying to underwrite the deal, source the deals, do all that, we decided to just focus on the relationships and the capital, because we had clarity on who we were as a team and what our strengths were. And we were able to build trust with people fairly quickly. We are who we are. We're authentic. And we, since we know the business, we're able to do that due diligence and vet these deals at a much higher caliber than the average investor could. I'm just being honest. And that's why we now operate a fund, because now investors will present a deal. They know our experience and credibility. And rather than going through all that work and effort themselves, they just invest into our fund, and then we diversify it across our portfolio into different deals in different markets. And we realized that we realized that any real estate deal needs capital, period. And so capital and money is the lifeblood of any real estate deal. And it is one of the hardest things to come across. People will find deals left and right, and then finding money to fund those deals can be a lot more challenging. And we wanted to embrace that challenge and crack the code on it. So we still haven't, by the way. I know I set myself up to make it sound like we cracked the code. We haven't, but we're learning, and we're in that progress. And during that, we realized that we didn't have a good system for raising capital. If you think about it, like, to find a deal, there's kind of this unwritten system. You identify your buy box, what you want to buy. You then talk to brokers. You identify the market. You underwrite the deal. You submit an offer. And there's this systematic approach you take to close on a deal. And we realized we didn't have our systematic approach for raising capital. Who were we even raising from? Who was gonna offer the money? So identifying the avatar. And where are they? How are we going to connect with them? How are we going to nurture them? How are you going to have that sales conversation with them? 80% of Americans, 80% make $100,000 or less a year. Our minimum investment for our fund is $100,000. I didn't grow up with that. My dad at his highest point was making 65, maybe 75,000 a year. So here we are now asking people for $100,000, and I grew up with this mindset that is a lot of money. And I'm not, it is to a lot of people. In the grand scheme of things, it's pennies. But in my belief system, it was a lot of money. And that was something that I had to work through, because if I'm sitting here trying to act all confident, Charles, asking you for $100,000, when I'm like, this is the most money I've ever seen in my entire life, you can't establish that confident rapport for people to want to trust you with their capital. Mm-hmm. And so part of that is working on your belief system around the capital, but having a good system, and having that good system makes it a lot easier, because you can go into those conversations much more confidently. And so that's really what we worked on. And we developed a CRM, and being active capital raisers in the space, we were able to infuse it with our mindset influence, and we recognized what it needed. And without intending to, it opened up opportunities to provide it for other people in the space as well.
Phenomenal.
Dude, that's awesome, man. William, they just like literally everything they learn, all the mistakes they made, they just package up and like, here's my gift to the world. Like, they just make it so much so easy for you. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I know we're running close on time, but I got to ask one question. Who was the first person you called to raise money from?
My grandfather.
Like, your grandfather.
Which doesn't surprise anyone listening to this, right?
Like, no, I think most people don't understand or don't realize that they're probably... is people literally directly related to you that have money that are willing to invest. It happens more and more than you know. Like, I found out recently that there's probably several millionaires in my church.
Yeah.
And you never know. They drive a 99 Honda Civic and you would never know.
You never know. Like one of my biggest private money lenders, Steven, is a friend of mine from college. His name is Steven. And he, you know, last I know, he got married, lost his job as an engineer, was jobless. And, you know, when I got started investing in real estate, you know, some years later, and I was telling him about it, he ended up being so interested and wanted to fund my deals. It's like, I was like, wait, like, where are you going to get that money from, Steven? Are you like drug dealing or something? Like, we're out of time, but he ended up, you know, doing some major things in his life that shifted his wealth and everything and built companies from the ground up. And so anyway, another story for another day, but you're right. You never know. And just like in how Dallin had his grandfather, some of you have friends from college. You just never know who has money in your network, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And awesome. This is awesome, man. Dallin, like we went over on yours because, I mean, you always have so many great things to say. But
I just talk too much. You can say that.
Yeah, you talk too much.
We listen too much. Maybe that's it.
We listen too much. You can say it. Yep. You talk too much. We listen too much. Great combination to go over. But is there anything else you'd like to share for our audience to become a breakthrough investor just like you?
Let people know what you're doing. We just talked about this with reaching out to family, friends. If they don't know what you're doing, and then all of a sudden you ask them for money for real estate, they're going to be like, what multi-level marketing scheme did you just buy into, right? That's probably one of the hardest things. And I still struggle with it. Letting people know what you're doing, because, and this is an internal belief system I'm working through. I don't ever want to be perceived as like, look at me, look what I'm doing. But the reality is the experiences you go through, whether it's in real estate or not, share those, because there is somebody that you're going to connect with that you're going to be able to help in a very, very solid way. And I can't tell you how many people that I hadn't talked to in years reached out to me because they were following my journey in real estate. And it wasn't, and you can do it in a very non-self-promotional way. Like, one of my favorite things to do is discuss and talk about the mistakes I made, because it makes you human and it shows that it's like, hey guys, I made this big mistake. You don't want to do this. That is delivering tremendous amount of value without you being like, hey, look at me, look at my Lamborghini, look at my jet.
That's the biggest turnoff.
It is. And I think a lot of us that grew up in humble beginnings, like, that's not how we want to be perceived. So we have a hard time telling people what it is that we're doing. But what I had to realize and what I'm still working through is, what about the people that need to hear or see what I'm doing that I'm not helping because I'm selfishly keeping those lessons and experience to myself? And you can do it in a very non-self promotional way. So just find somebody that you admire, that you watch, that you look up to, and see how they deliver their message and experience, and just copy it.
That's right.
You got to brand yourself. Let people know what you're doing.
This is a book. Yeah. This is a book in the making.
Yes, I love it, man. This has been awesome, man. Thank you so much for sharing that, man. So, Dallin, if our audience want to know more about you and to connect with you, how can they connect with you online?
LinkedIn's the best spot right now. That's where I'm spending most of my time. I'm trying to spend less time on Facebook and Instagram. So LinkedIn, So LinkedIn, Dallin Schultz. Pretty sure I'm the only one on there. And then if anyone's interested in seeing what we put together for the CRM, they can go to capitalistpro.io. And we spelt it kind of funny because we wanted to get creative. So we'll throw that link into the comments so you guys can check that out there.
Awesome. Perfect. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, man. And we're looking forward to seeing you at Rubicon again next year, man.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, man.
Thanks for coming on, man.